Hey guys, and thank you for joining us today at IED Sports. We're messing around with some stats. I'm calling this segment Storytime Stats. We're throwing out some random stats. We're going to talk about, do they matter? Are they indicators of something else? Do we need to keep an eye on them? This is Storyline Stats. This is IED Sports. Thank you for joining us. Steve, NFL action may be months away, but we're here talking about fantasy, grinding it, and getting to the bottom of a few interesting statistics that I found online this week. You ready to go?
A few months away? We got free agency in like 2 weeks.
And then the NFL draft. This is a year-long sport. That's what I'm saying. I'm just, you know, we're not there yet. We're not drafting redraft right now. But let's talk about some stats. Let's get right into it. First player I want to talk about is a player who I love talking about all year. He was one of the running backs I was absolutely highest on. All my rankings are available to the public. I sang his praises all offseason.
People
were sleeping on him. And Aaron Jones came through again. He was tied for first in the league with Derrick Henry with 440-plus yard rushes. That is the stat we're looking at. 440-plus yard rushes. His longest was 77 yards. He has that explosive ability. Again, tied with Derrick Henry, 440-plus yard rushes. He was running back 5.5 PPR in 2020 after finishing number two in 2019. 1,558 yards in 2019, 1,459 in 2020 with 30 touchdowns during that span. He turned 26 this past December and is only has 782 NFL touches. Why is he not considered a top elite tier running back? Currently going 201 at running back 9 in redraft. That is the stat we're analyzing. Does it matter that Aaron Jones ran the ball 40-plus times, four times in 2019, Steve? In 2020, Steve.
I mean, it doesn't, because he splits touches with Williams. And because he splits touches with Williams, you know, he didn't get a lot of tread, but he still got 1,400 yards and 1,500 yards. But, you know, if we're talking about him changing teams, running backs who change teams don't have much success. You know, there are only two recent examples that I can think of right now. One that comes to mind is Kareem Hunt, obviously, you know, switching from the Chiefs to the Browns, and then the playoff version of Leonard Fournette, because regular season Fournette was not good.
Well, he didn't have the opportunity, so let's lay off.
He was actually almost cut, but anyway. So, assuming you consider Jones to be the better of those two running backs, which I personally do, you know, if he doesn't return to the Packers, he should be fine. But honestly, the Packers would be foolish to let Jones walk, because he's been nothing but productive.
Absolutely. Now, I did some research here. It looks like they're about $10 million over cap, which is not an unsurmountable way to go. My question here is really going to be, why are we so worried about the landing spot? I mean, he's putting up more production than Saquon. He's putting up Dalvin Cook, Kamara numbers 2-3 years in a row now. He's been the guy. If it was one of those other three players that I mentioned, Cook, Saquon, Kamara, would we be as worried about landing spot? My argument here, it doesn't matter. He's explosive. That stat shows it. And that's not even the 10-plus yard runs, because he had an amazing amount of 10-plus yard runs in 2022. Would we be as worried with Dalvin Cook, Saquon, or Kamara?
Only if it was Kamara. The other two, I wouldn't.
So why are we worried? Aaron Jones has proved that he's the guy. And not only is the age still appropriate, he's still on the younger side, he doesn't have tread on the tires, because he's been in a tandem his entire career, and he still produces. There's no landing spot that's really going to be bad on Aaron Jones that he's going to take the hit. First of all, teams aren't going to go out and spend and grab Aaron Jones if they're not looking for a complete three down back who can catch the ball, who can go in the goal line, who can go on first down. So why are we worried? What is the deal with Aaron Jones? I think we're kind of on the same page here. You know, over off last offseason, a couple pictures of AJ Dillon with his legs out. Now all of a sudden it's a meme. People were down on Aaron Jones last season. Now they're down on him this season because he may land in a bad spot. He's not going to land in a bad spot. He's a good player. We need to trust that the cream will rise to the top. He may go into another workload, work share. He's been in a work share. It doesn't matter. That's my whole point. So Aaron,
where do you think he goes?
What?
Where do you think he goes? Where do you think he lands?
I don't care. Atlanta, maybe. I don't care. I really don't care. Aaron Jones, at this second round where you're going to get him, running back 9, I think it was. You're good. Just take him. Aaron Jones. Let's move on to the next stat. James Robinson, 1,414 scrimmage yards, is the most for any undrafted running back in NFL history. Now, Robinson emerged as a top back last season and a bright spot on a very, very bad team. He managed 16 broken tackles, including 5 in one game, that 159-yard game against a pretty good Browns defense. He scored 10 touchdowns, which I assume can only go up next season with Trevor Lawrence at the helm. He's going to be a three-down back because, let's face it, Jaguars don't have anyone else on the roster right now that they would need to spell him for. He's proven he can handle the workload, and he's cheap. James Robinson, maybe not a dynasty guy, but for next year, James Robinson does 1,414 scrimmage yards matter.
Yes, it does. But personally, I do want to see how the draft shakes out because, you know, I just want to see if they take a running back within the first four rounds. If they don't, I'm inclined to say that James Robinson will be the lead running back for this team. But, you know, with a new head coach, you never know. You know,
my question is going to be they're going to get a quarterback. Then they need to grab some offensive line. First of all, if they're grabbing a running back, it's going to be way down draft. You do still have other young running backs here. They're just not as good. James Robinson solidified his role for me. I think 1,414 scrimmage yards is an undrafted running back, most in history. Just says, hey, he was a lot of talent. He was a lot of guys missed on him. If you have someone that's playing that well, give them the ball. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
My next question is going to be, currently going 2-11, second round, 11th pick behind Antonio Gibson and ahead of David Montgomery. Which of these three would you rather have?
I would rather have David Montgomery only because, like I said before, you know, with the new head coach and having sustained success as a free agent rookie running back is rare. You know, the only runner that I can remember to, you know, to have that success and then keep their job as the lead runner is Arian Foster. That's the last one I can remember.
Absolutely. There were free agent running backs recently like Philip Lindsay, but his size alone just said he was never going to be a workhorse back. And you saw what the team did in the offseason, grabbing Melvin Gordon to add to that backfield. Plus, you got guys like LeGarrette Blount and CJ Anderson. CJ Anderson was very good, very useful, made a lot of money playing good running back. But he was never that workhorse guy. He was never that, you know, thousand touch. He had a couple thousand yard seasons, but not the all-star that James Robinson would have to be to return on investment at the end of the second round.
And I personally think that Robinson can be that superstar. I think that he can be a fantasy darling. It's just that at this moment, I'm just going to go with Montgomery. And you know, if things shake out, like I said, in the draft, Then I'm definitely going to change my answer. I would definitely take Robinson over Montgomery.
Now here, I'm coming up with a pair of stats now on a player that I really like. Spoiler alert, I guess. There are two stats. One is a yards per play stat, and the other is a speed, a top speed stat. First one, Nelson Aguilar, week 16. These are back-to-back weeks. Week 16, 85-yard receiving touchdown where he actually ran 117.8 yards, according to NFL Next Gen Stats, one of the longest plays of the season. The next week, 57-yard touchdown reception where he was clocked at 21.72 miles per hour, tied for 7th fastest speed clocked in an NFL game this season. Do these stats matter to you, Steve?
No, because any wide receiver can flash in the pan like that.
Okay, so currently going 13-03 in drafts, wide receiver 59. I asked Twitter. Now I'm gonna ask you, where do you have Aguilar in 2021? Is he going to be? I mean, that is wide receiver 59. That's a wide receiver 5. That's a flex only, never in your starting roster type player. I have to say, I have him much higher. Do you have him higher than that?
I do not have him on my draft board at all. I see him going to a wide receiver depleted team like the Lions because the Lions are losing almost all of their wide receivers this offseason, and he'll be a deep threat there. He'll be the sprint runner. But I only see him as a placeholder for a young receiver like Quintez Cephas, who is already on the roster, who's already shown promise. Aguilar is not a premier wide receiver like all other notable veterans who have switched teams in the past. Allen Robinson, Brandon Cooks, DeAndre Hopkins, they've all been good when they've switched teams. I don't see Aguilar as one of those. He's always been just another body.
Aguilar switched teams to get to be really good last season. And I pulled up his per 16 averages for the second half of the season, which, you know, a couple of games during COVID to get settled in. Over the past, I don't remember, 7 or 8 games, his per 16 would be 70 for 1,257 touchdowns. That'd put him 202 half PPR points, about equal to Robert Woods at wide receiver 13 over the second half of last season, in not a great situation with Carr, in his first year with a new team. So right now you're basically drafting him at his absolute floor for absolute free. I never liked Aguilar in the past, but I'm going to have some shares in 2021 if he goes to the right spot. And who cares if it's just a 1-2 year stopgap? If he gets this type of opportunity, there are plenty of teams that are going to give someone 80, 90, 110 targets. I mean, it's possible. It's possible he stays. I think he told his teammates that they sucked when he walked off the field in week 16. So, but hey, Gruden has put up with characters in the past, including Antonio Brown. I can't imagine Aguilar's much worse than that head case. So, you know, I'm here to talk you into it. Nelson Aguilar averaged 18.7 yards per reception, number 2 in the league in 2020. He's been being used wrong. If I told you Doug Peterson was using a player wrong for their whole career, would that surprise you, Steve?
No, not really.
That should be a quick no from everyone. He was also 17th in the league in completed air yards, and he was 12th in the league with 22 deep targets. He's not a slot receiver. Put him down the side and run him down the field a couple times a game, and you're going to have fantasy success. He's going to be a boom or bust guy, but you need him in a bye week. He's your wide receiver 3. You drafted him as a wide receiver 5. Just go for it. Who cares? He can burn down the field, and I don't think his quarterback situation over the course of his career is going to get worse. He may have other quarterbacks that are fantasy irrelevant, but Carr, Wentz, Foles, he's been in quarterback purgatory. Those guys have all played all right at certain points, but not fantasy studs. So I think Nelson Aguilar is someone to dig deep on, and I think his stats, those explosive plays, the two that I posted in particular, are going to be indicative of Nelson Aguilar's future.
Well, I'm going to throw some numbers at you too. His three best seasons, 2017, 2018, and 2020. Two of those seasons were in Philly, the 17 and 18 season, and he had 60 plus catches for 700 plus scrimmage yards, and his catch rate was at 65 and 66% in each season respectively. But then in 2020, you know, Aguilar had 48 receptions and only 800 some odd yards. I think it was 863, somewhere in that area, and he had a 58.5% catch radius. You know, so these are, you know, those are okay numbers, but
they are,
you know,
okay, look at numbers, but here's the one that's going to rule all. Yards per reception around 10, 11, 12 his entire career. This past year, 18.7 yards per reception.
Well, that's it. Well, here's some other numbers to consider. In 2017, those three best seasons, 2017, wide receiver 23, 2018, wide receiver 35. Then in 2020, his best finish in yardage, matched with his best finish in touchdowns, wide receiver 29. These are all wide receiver 3 finishes at best. He is not a 1,000-yard receiver. He is touchdown dependent, and, you know, 13.03 in redraft or in any draft is too high for me to consider him. He's undrafted, in my opinion.
Then I'll get him. Okay, let's move on to our next interesting stat. Here again, we're just taking some stats and seeing what stats matter, what stats don't matter. In the 2020 regular season, there were 12,692 points scored total. That tops the previous 2013 record by 705 points, or about 2.75 points per game. All this season, we were convinced we have great quarterback turnover. There's going to be a lot of quarterbacks leaving. A lot of quarterbacks aren't good enough for the NFL. Is quarterback play in 2020 really that bad, or are we just spoiled football fans at this point? Again, the stat here, 12,692 total points, the most scoring season ever in NFL history. Steve, is this a stat? Is this a thing? Is this not a thing?
Well, that's a loaded question, honestly, because on one hand, you have 8 to 10 teams that are making quarterback changes this offseason. But then on the other hand, you had fantastic play from the likes of Brady, Rodgers, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, you know. But then on the other hand, you had horrible quarterback play from Carson Wentz, Cam Newton, the San Francisco and the Chicago quarterbacks. You know, we are spoiled to have such great quarterbacks like the ones I mentioned, but you know, we also on the other side get spoiled. We get spoiled because of the atrocious quarterback play of former superstars and just a mishmash of other quarterbacks.
Actually, and then you're playing the stars and studs here, where you're saying some guys are so bad that the other guys are good. But what I'm really thinking of here is just the guys in the middle. You have Kirk Cousins, 35 touchdowns, Tannehill, 33, Herbert, Carr, Stafford. These are guys with 31, 27. Then you have Matt Ryan, Kyler, Baker, Lamar, all with 26 passing touchdowns. These are not all studs here. These are just guys who are just guys. You don't need to be a superstar to score a lot of points. The average quarterback rating this year was up 93.6 from 90.4 a year ago, and that's up nearly 10 points from a decade ago. Quarterbacks now are more accurate. They're making better plays. Guys like Derek Carr threw for 4,100 yards, 27 touchdowns last season. You can say he's not a great quarterback, and that might be true, but he's putting the stats up and they're putting the numbers on the board. So does it matter? Are we changing? Are we playing in a different NFL now that there's more points scored than ever?
Well, I think it's going to come down to the success of the second year rookies. You know, Herbert and Burrow, they were electric. They were great. You know, you mentioned their numbers, and then even Burrow, when he went down, you know, his numbers were before he went down, his numbers were great. But I'm really concerned with like Tua and Hurts, because Tua left a lot to be seen. You know, Fitzpatrick's going to walk somewhere. I thought it was going to be the Colts, but not now. And but the biggest wild card is going to be Jalen Hurts. You know, we've seen this before. A guy who's flashed with a small handful of games, but then when you're actually given the keys to the franchise, you leave a lot to be desired. You know, two recent examples, Drew Lock and Jimmy G. You know, we got a good sample size when they first got there. Jimmy G's still the starter for now, and Drew Lock, this is his year to prove.
Anyone who backed up Tom Brady could fall in that category. I think immediately of Matt Castle. Remember when he played
with Oh, yeah. Percent?
One of those. Okay, so let's move on to our next stat. And again, we're thinking, does this stat matter? Can this stat be replicated? Is this indicative of anything else going on? The stat we're going to look at now, Eagles are the only team in the NFL to have no wide receivers break 600 yards receiving. In the game Jalen Hurts started, there were also no wide receivers that would have been on 600-yard pace. So not only were there no 600-yard cumulative, Jalen Hurts wasn't helping any of them either. Steve, is this stat a thing? Not a thing?
There were no wide receivers on the Eagles capable of getting to 600 yards. Who did the Eagles rely on? They relied on DeSean Jackson, oft injured. Alshon Jeffrey, off injured. Travis Fulgham, unproven lightning in the bottle. Jalen Reagor, oft injured. Greg Ward, unreliable. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, dropped more balls than Nelson Agholor. Quez Watkins and John Hightower didn't even get enough snaps to show anything. That's nine wide receivers there. Nine on one team. And while, you know, Reagor and Fulgham are going to be the stars, you know, I think Reagor, you know, flashed enough that he could be.
That's exactly where I'm going to cut you off, because that's exactly where I want to jump in. Now, this stat, wide receivers, no one breaking 600 yards, that actually makes me happy, because it means there's going to be value somewhere. You're not going to do that 2 years in a row. There are teams that are very run heavy, but that wasn't the Eagles team either. They just had nothing going on a lot on this offense. I'm interested in Reagor, who didn't have a bad year. He just didn't have a ton of opportunity. He did have injuries. He got off to a little bit of a slow start, but he had 12.8 yards per reception, and he was 31 for 54 for 396 yards. not bad, being that he missed five games in a weird COVID year with all this other stuff going on. The stats I want to pull up for Jalen Reagor, which really jumped out, and I guess we're doing a stat. This is Statception. We're talking about a stat that matters, and then stats inside the stat that matters. Mm-hmm. 6.2 yards per reception. 6.2 yards after catch per reception, which was better than Devontae Adams, better than Tyreek Hill, better than Terry McLaurin. He also only had one drop all season on his 54 targets. Okay. So that's giving you a lot of information. 6.2 yards after the catch is a lot in the NFL. And that makes me a little excited that, to me, he's almost separated a little. When you have that yard after catch, you're separated from your quarterback in the way that bad quarterback play is going to be less indicative of what you put on the field than if you're a down the field kind of guy. Fulgham did flash, but he has absolutely no draft capital, no potential. All that easily favors Jalen Reagor. We can consolidate some of the down roster targets, meaning the guys on the wide receiver depth chart that don't matter, some of the injury fill-ins. If we can consolidate that onto Jalen Reagor, he can easily have 110 targets next season, which could be good enough for like 65 catches for 800 yards, five touchdowns. Could be in the 140, 150 category for points scored over the season, which I think could be his absolute floor. He's currently going unlisted according to Fantasy Football Calculator for 2021 in drafts. Could not find him in the top. I think it showed the top 59 wide receivers. He was not part of the top 60 going in current fantasy drafts.
Okay. If somebody's getting 110 targets, I'm expecting at least 75 to 80 receptions. If he's getting 110 targets and not even pulling in 70 of those targets, that's somebody that I would want to avoid. That's
70%. I mean, I think let me see what my exact stat numbers are. So it's 66. I had him down for divided by 110. I had him at 60%. So 60% of his catches, which is about league average for wide receivers. Again, I wanted to hear calculate his floor, not necessarily his ceiling. Okay.
That's 60%. Fair. That's fair.
I don't think anyone on Greg Ward had 67%, but like no one else, even Zach Ertz, 50%. Travis Fulgham, 56.7%. So that, I think, on this team with the quarterback question mark, 60 is not overreaching. But I just wanted to show you that without overreaching, you can easily have him as, you know, a wide receiver 38 as his floor. He's wide receiver 3. Okay.
Well, but, and then what if things
do go his way?
What was that?
But that's his floor. What if things do go his way?
If things do go his way, like he could, we're talking about a top 20 wide receiver if things go his way, because you know, where he showed speed. His very first catch was a 55 yard reception. You know, the kid can run. He's just got to stay healthy.
Got to stay on the field, and you need to separate yourself from Doug Peterson, get yourself a quarterback. There are other problems to be had, but that's why when you calculate the floor, the numbers add up for me. And I think I'm going to, I hate Philly. Why am I drafting all these Philly wide receivers? I don't know what's going on.
Is Doug Peterson the new Adam Gase? Like, players need to get away from him to thrive.
Well, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl, so I guess they got something there. Guys, we're finishing up here. Steve, any final thoughts?
No, I'm just excited for free agency to get here. I want to see where all these players go.
Thank you for joining us today at IED Sports.